you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Thursday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is, of course, the 17th of October 2024. Every single Thursday, we do this thing called Shapeshifters. And this is where we bring you some of the leading minds and leading people across the African continent. And today is no different at all. Why? Because we're talking to Advocate Maphosa, an agile and sturdy lawyer whose practice spans from specialized criminal defense to civil litigation with a definite bias towards international corporate law as well as a finance, serving both local and international clients, including of course, international financial institutions and a bit of local parastatals. She's joining us on the line to tell us this evening a little bit about who she is, how she got to be where she is. And that's the whole point of Shapeshifter, right? But more importantly, we want to know about money because this is a business show. This is a money show. She's joining us on the line. Good evening, Advocate.
Oh, hello, hello.
How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you so much.
It's not always that I get to talk to advocates, so I'm really excited about this one, eh?
It's not always that we find ourselves on radio, equally excited.
That's a beautiful one. But thank you for joining us this evening. We really appreciate your time.
Absolute pleasure. Yeah. Absolute pleasure.
The only thing is that I don't have the hourly invoice to pay, so please bear with us, please, ne?
You'll have to talk to me very nicely. We are used to connecting time with money.
Exactly.
No, it's perfectly fine. It's a pleasure being here.
No, thank you so much, ma'am. Really, really, I appreciate it. Now, I just want to start here. Before we get into the nick of things, right, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
You know, I never know what to say when people ask me
that. It's an odd question, right?
Okay, so I'm a legal practitioner.
Yeah.
I've been practicing for 25 years.
25 years.
Yeah. And I started off with a small law firm.
Okay.
And I was very thoroughly trained there because the senior partner was an ex-army colonel.
Look at that.
So he gave us army training. So by the time I joined the law firm I'm with now, which is Sawyer and Mkushi, legal practitioners, I think I was ready for the big, market.
Okay.
And yes, and so I joined this firm in 2021. And by 2024, I had been promoted to being a partner, of the partners. And I've been a partner since, right until today.
Ooh, lovely. And where were you born? Let's go back there. Where were you born?
All right. I was born in the mighty province of Mashingo, where the Karangas live and where they hail from, in a small place called Morganstar.
Okay.
And I went to primary school. First of all, you know, I was raised by my aunt, actually, after my father passed away. My father passed away before I was born. So by my aunt in Gutu, in the rural areas, I think for the first 5 years of my life. Then I went to join my mom. And I grew up in a small mining asbestos town called Mashava.
Yeah.
I did my high school in Mashingo.
Yeah.
And then I came to Harare for university.
And what is village life like in Zimbabwe?
How on earth will I know? You know, when you are not yet five, when you are below five, village life
you know
is life.
Nothing,
I actually thought that Gutu, being the rural areas, I thought it was Zimbabwe.
Okay.
So, yes, I thought everywhere else that was not Gutu, it was other countries. So that's how big that place was for me. But I think growing up in the rural areas for me was the best thing because, number one, I got my aunt's temperament. She's very calm and very, you know. Yes. And then my mom is a bit feisty.
Oh, okay. You know? Okay.
And then, yes. And of course, it taught me all the Shona I needed to know.
Yeah.
So, you know, by the time I went to school, I was always the best student because I wasn't learning Shona.
Yeah.
Shona was a part of me. I grew up knowing those trees, those animals, those creatures, those birds, you know. So it was really, it was a language that was a part of me. So it was easy for me.
Okay. And what were some of the socio-economic challenges at the time, particularly when you went to school or during your school years? I'm sure there you could pick up a few things, maybe poverty, drugs, all those sort of stuff. Because I know it's usually at those formative years when we get easily influenced.
No, it's true. There were no drugs then.
Okay.
Please understand.
Yeah, no, noted.
I think the naughtiest students smoked, you know, and maybe drank alcohol here and there during the weekends. But then understand, I was only in the rural areas up to 5-6 years.
Okay.
And then I went off to a multiracial setup.
Okay. Yeah.
Because then my mother, you know, she got a good job and then she took us to, it's called the Lani life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, we then just grew up with in a multiracial system. And so I can't really talk too much about the poverty side of it, but things were just hard anyway because there were 7 of us that my mother was trying to feed, and I was the youngest of them. So, you know, you are at the bottom of the food chain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if there's anything to be eaten in the home, you know, your best bet is to go to the guava tree or the mango tree, you know, because everybody else is, you know, is old enough to grab the big guns.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And
at the time, I'm trying to think in my mind, it must have been like a huge adjustment to move into a multiracial school where there's, I suppose, white people and people of other languages as well. How did you handle that?
Well, I was always kind of like, I can't say I was forward, but I was very confident. Already from the school that I was coming from, you know, because I started off a little at a government school.
Yeah.
From the school I was coming from, I was actually the top student.
Oh.
So I just had to catch up, you know, with the spoken English, you know,
the
written
one.
English and all that and the read English. I was okay. But the spoken English now to talk to the white people, you know, to catch up very quickly.
Yeah.
And so it was quite not really a big challenge because then the kids were very friendly and you're a new student, you know, they're all excited about that. They all want to be your friend.
Yes.
So it was actually very good. And I think at the school where I was, it was just easy. If you were just going to distinguish yourself as a good sports person or a good, you know, your penmanship is good and everything, then you just rose, up the ranks. So that was okay because I think I was hardworking. I was pretty focused and balanced.
Ah, okay. And would you say, if you were to, I suppose, compare and all that, would you say you were a little bit privileged?
I would say that I was very, very blessed. Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Very, very privileged.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I joined my mom from Gutu, from the rural setup, we went into what you call the ghetto. And, you know, we were staying in a 4-roomed house.
Yeah.
And it was from that 4-roomed house that we then moved to a 2-acre property with a swimming pool, 4-bedroomed house, you know. And now, you know, we could go to swimming clubs. And now, you know, you could go to school trips. And it was extremely, I think, you know, it was very, very blessed, especially because during that time, women were not really regarded very highly, in society. I think we had just, in Zimbabwe, we had just gotten our Legal Age of Majority Act.
Yes.
And that was when women were being now recognized as adults at 18. And you can imagine, here's my mother. She has 7 children. She is a woman in that setup.
Yeah.
But because she had studied so well and distinguished herself and gotten so many courses, they had to give her the job. But they couldn't even pay her as much as she was supposed to be paid because she was a woman.
Yeah.
So, you know, so the, you know, the difficulties that come, they did come.
Yeah.
But definitely it was a huge jump from the rural areas, from the ghetto to where to then where we grew up. It was really, really such a blessing. And that's where, of course, I then learned all the English I needed to know.
Yes, definitely. and I'm asking this question because our view on the show is that if there's absolutely nothing wrong in growing up in privilege. We tend to make poverty as if it's the thing. No, I grew up in poor, and we make it as if it's a it's a big thing.
It's the only inspiration.
Exactly. Like, it really doesn't make sense. Like, when you are blessed by God and God has put you at a certain level, we must still appreciate that. Yeah. Not that, you know, we must now espouse, make it look like it's sin now to grow up in a privilege. No, it's not sin. That's where God has blessed you. And we need to appreciate that, because there's lessons and challenges even at that level.
A lot of lessons and challenges, you know, and then there's always, you know, the nuances that come in. It's not always like block, they are poor or block, they are rich. Yeah. No, it's never about that. There can be poverty in those riches.
Yeah.
There can be a lot of wealth in that poverty.
Definitely.
So you have to understand that, you know, wherever God has placed you, he gives you these little silver linings in the clouds, you know, and he also gives you, he has ways of pulling you back if you're having too much privilege.
Definitely.
So you remember what life is truly about.
He can just like switch on that thing and say, pull back until she lands. That these things come from me. They are not from him or her. So that's quite true. Yeah, I love that. And how would you say that has impacted or influenced the person that you turned out to be, with the benefit of so-called hindsight that politicians love? I don't know why they love hindsight, but there's always something about hindsight with politicians.
Let me debunk that for you.
Oh, okay.
There is a famous saying that says the further back you can look into the past, the further you can see into the future. You know why? Because history repeats itself. So when you see where you are coming from, it helps you map the way forward for where you are going.
Yes, that's true.
So politicians, I'm there with them. I'm okay with them when they say, you know, with the benefit of hindsight. Sometimes, of course, it's to do with giving excuses. Hindsight always does benefit you.
I love that.
But to answer your question, I have just been, you know, like, God has been deliberate about my life. Maybe let me put it that way, because I'm going to talk about that a little more. He's been very, very deliberate about my life personally. And so there was a reason I grew up for those first 6 years in the rural areas and another 4 years in the, you know, in the high density suburbs. And then the rest of my life in this, you know, I don't want to say opulence or decadence, but, you know, in a privileged environment, right?
Yeah.
Because now I'm not only just a lawyer, but I'm an international preacher.
And
a local preacher as well. So I have to go to the rural areas to preach to them. I can speak their language. I understand their life because I was there. I can go to the high density suburbs. I can speak their language. I can be, you know, one with them without them even noticing that you are from anywhere else. I can also be in the high places and fit in perfectly. And so imagine having that privilege, because people are always trying to fit in into a place where they're not comfortable, they're not used to. But I'm used to all that. I've been there, you know, and so it has been amazing. So that even when I am, you know, when I am teaching people, say, on radio, etc., and it's people in the rural areas, I can speak their language. You know, I know the things that bother them. If it's also people who are, you know, in the higher places in the hierarchy, you can also speak to them. So it puts you in this absolutely privileged position, really, where you can balance it all out, especially as a minister of the gospel.
Especially as a minister of the gospel, right? And there's obviously aspects of your trade and your expertise that come through when you are speaking internationally, particularly from as a minister of the gospel as well. There's skills there that you do put in.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I'm also privileged that I'm black. I can understand black problems. I'm also a privileged that I'm a woman. So I can understand women problems. I'm also privileged that I can, you know, because I'm a lawyer, I also understand the things that affect men,
yes,
you know. So I love men's ministries,
yeah,
you know. Sometimes I enjoy it more than all the other ministries.
Oh, look at
because
that.
Yes, because no one seems to give attention to the
yeah,
men.
It, true.
But
true.
If you open your eyes, you can actually see that there are some specific issues where men need assistance, and perhaps they are not actually even getting them from other men
yeah.
or from elders or pastors.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's true.
So yes, it helps a lot because you also become a type of expert, let's
yes.
say, in terms of trust services, inheritance,
yes.
wills, the types of marriages, the things that are affecting people, you know, the societal challenges that
yeah.
they're having.
Yeah.
So you're speaking from a position of knowledge.
Yeah.
So I'm not a social scientist.
Yeah.
I can quote an act.
Yeah.
I can tell you what the constitution in South Africa says
yes.
about this and what's the
Ooh.
Difference between, say, marriage regimes
Ooh.
In the US and
yeah.
in Zimbabwe. So it allows me to be more versatile
yeah.
and more relevant, I suppose. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really grateful for that.
Ah, lovely. Did you always know that you wanted to be an advocate or, say, a lawyer?
No.
Ah, how did that come about?
You know, you will laugh because
yeah.
When I was in grade one, and you know how they ask you in kindergarten
yes.
to say, what do you want to
exactly.
be when you grow up?
Yeah.
Do you know what I said?
What did you say?
The president.
Oh, okay. But that's still possible, right?
Oh, well, well, well.
Mm.
You know, it was very interesting because to think that at that age, I was looking at right at the top. I didn't want a boss.
Look, number
and
one.
And so I think in that sense, maybe I did want to have something to do with law, something to do with not having to answer to someone, being on top of the situation.
Look at that. Okay.
Yes, no, but essentially, I think when I chose my A-level
yeah.
subjects,
yeah.
you know, I pretty much knew that, you know, if I did very well,
yeah.
then law was my first choice. I had
oh,
other
okay.
choices,
okay.
which included medicine, you won't believe it, and electrical
okay.
engineering.
Oh, okay.
Because, yes, I was very scientific, I was very
sure.
artsy, I was all that. But I just pretty much knew that with the subjects that I'd chosen,
yeah.
if I did very well, and if the Lord, you know, with God's grace, then I was going to do law. So it was around A-level that I had an
yes.
idea of where I was going.
Yes.
Oh, but yeah. not younger.
Yeah. Well, young people will say that was demure, you know, from a young age.
Oh, my goodness. That word comes up again. No, no, no. I don't think it was demure at all.
Yeah.
It was actually very, you know, it was me being very pointed about
okay.
where I was going. I was actually
okay.
very, very feisty, I
yeah.
think, about it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
I was a go-getter there.
So would you say you took the feistiness a bit from your mom, like you mentioned earlier on?
Oh, absolutely. I almost said 100%.
Yeah,
but you
yeah.
see, she's the only parent that I grew up with.
Yes.
My mother was such a go-getter.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine, she trained herself. She went for courses. She went overseas. By the time she passed away, we counted about 13 certificates of her qualification.
Ooh.
Because she just figured, look, I've been widowed as a young child. She was 29. She
sure.
had 7 children.
Sure.
So she said, I'm just not going to get married. I'm
yeah.
going to go educate myself, raise
yeah.
my kids, and that will be my reward and my portion in this world. And so
sure.
she was such a go-getter. There was no place where she could not go. And
yeah.
I think it was an object lesson for us. You
Look
see it
at
now.
That. Sure.
You know.
That's
yeah.
really lovely. And you went to then the University of Zimbabwe, right?
I went to the University of Zimbabwe, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then I know there's different streams into law, but you particularly mm-hmm. went for corporate, constitutional, and I believe also family law. Why those particular specific ones?
You know what? I don't think that I deliberately went and did that.
Yeah.
I definitely avoided criminal law. I
okay.
loved criminal law. But, you know, criminal law can be a bit dicey sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And with where I wanted to go, I was only happy to do specialized criminal law. Like, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
During the land reform program in Zimbabwe,
yeah.
we had a lot of commercial farmers
yeah.
being arraigned, being taken to court for
yeah.
being illegally on the farms they were on, etc. So I then became the lawyer for most of those farmers. Mm. So this is where you're dealing with a constitutional criminal matter.
Yeah.
It's not your typical criminal matter. So that's what I mean when I say specialized criminal matters. Mm. But and I was just drawn to that because I was requested to actually be the lawyer for the Commercial Farmers Union.
Yeah, yeah.
And I then did that, but it wasn't deliberate. But in terms of corporate and international banking and finance, I always had an interest in that. I was always an accounting financial person.
Yes.
And with that kind of bias.
Yeah.
And also being a board director in a lot of, listed companies,
sure,
and quasi-government companies,
yeah,
et cetera. Your bias tends to kind of like go in that way.
Yeah.
And then in terms of family life, honestly, it's just, in church, a lot of people need lawyers in terms of family life. And because if you are one of the most visible lawyers, they will always come to you. So you also see your practice is also going in that direction.
Okay. I want to come back to the question about money, because you just mentioned, money.
Yes.
So when you say money, I get very excited. So I'll come back to that. Now, let's get into a little bit of, I suppose, back to school type of a thing, right? Back to law school, back to law class.
Yes.
What is this precedence? You all always talk about precedence and precedent in there. So I've heard people say lawyers and president, and some other, no, it's not precedent, it's precedence.
It's
What's this precedence thing that you always talk about?
Law and the Bible,
they
pretty much go together.
Ooh.
I can't just say to you one day, cleanliness is next to godliness. What's the next thing you ask me for? It's a verse.
Yes.
You say, can you tell us which verse
where
that's
you
coming
found
from?
That? Yes, yes.
Even though it's commonly used, but we need to have an authority. So we call it, what's your authority? Are you quoting spirit of prophecy? Then you say spirit of prophecy. Okay, it's the thoughts from the Mount of Blessing.
Yes.
What? That's your authority.
Yeah.
So you need to, because you are obviously not coming up with this on your own.
Yeah.
But you are quoting someone who is respected.
Yes.
Somebody whose authority we can respect.
Yes.
So in the very same way, we do the same with the law.
Yeah.
I can't just come and tell you that, maybe Lobola has been scraped.
Yeah.
Yes, maybe it has been scraped. But I will ask you, what is your authority?
Yeah.
And authority now is the precedence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your authority can be, the Act of Parliament, it can be the Constitution, it can be the statutory instrument.
Yeah.
And then the High Court or the Supreme Court or the Appellate Division, they will have given a prior judgment supporting your position.
Yeah.
So that becomes your authority. So I said that's the precedence.
Yeah.
To say, surely, unless you are telling us you are discovering a new law in this world, this has been decided on before by some court. Tell us what that case was and what that court said.
Sure.
Then we'll believe what you are saying.
Sure. Yeah. Does someone who wants to be a lawyer need to read a lot, love reading?
Oh, they have to love reading.
Ooh.
They have to be very, 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 very curious. They have to love research.
Yeah.
They have to love history even, because like I'm telling you, the precedent, it's the precedent or a precedent or precedents.
Yeah.
It's not just to say, what did the High Court say in Zimbabwe?
Yeah.
It's also to say, what do the All England Law Reports say? Because that law is persuasive to us.
Yeah.
What do the South African Law Reports say? Because that is persuasive to us.
Yeah.
If we go beyond that, we are looking at St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
We're talking of Voet and Grotius.
Yeah.
So we go right back to the people who started with the law.
Yeah.
So
you
must be able to, and we call that jurisprudence, which is the science
That's
of
another
the law.
Word. Right. That's another word right there.
That's another word. So that is like the science of the law.
Yes.
It's funny because law is an art.
Yeah.
But, so jurisprudence is when the law becomes very scientific.
Yeah.
And so you have to be able to read a lot.
Yeah.
You have to be able to research a lot, to inquire, even from other jurisdictions.
Yeah.
So you notice that maybe there's a case that has not been dealt with in Zimbabwe or South Africa or England.
Yes.
I can go to we can actually go to Indonesia or to Kenya and say, what did the court, how did they look at this, you know, so that we sharpen us. So, it's a lot of research. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of research.
But it's fun because you'll be learning so much.
No, it sounds like it is fun, right? Okay, I'm going to end my free class here by asking the next one, and then we move from my class because I've just learned jurisprudence. I've learned precedence, right? Now, this thing of my lady and my lord, where is that one coming from now?
All right. So that one, it actually comes from England.
Okay.
So our laws that influence us, we call it the Roman Dutch law.
Yes.
So that pushes, that tells us essentially the history of our law, that it came from Rome. That's why we have a lot of Latin in our law, right? Res ipsa loquitur. So we use Latin like it's just a normal language as lawyers.
Yeah.
So it's because we're coming from Rome, okay? And then, of course, we track it. It then came through to South Africa, right?
Yeah.
And in South Africa, we had the Boers, didn't we?
Yeah.
Who were coming from Holland. And then we had the English, who were coming from England.
Yeah.
And so we have the Dutch and the English influencing the Roman law.
Yeah.
So now that's why we call it like the Roman Dutch law. And that's why you see that the English courts.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Whatever their decisions, they persuade us.
Yeah.
The South African courts, because our laws also came from South Africa coming up. Coming up north to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And so we've got all those influencing our law.
Mm.
And excuse me.
No problem.
And so because of that, you will see that our law becomes extremely rich in that sense.
Yeah.
Yes. Where.
Sure.
Sorry, you have to tell me your original question again so I can directly answer.
So I was saying my lord, my lady, and all
that.
Ah,
thank you.
Yes.
And so the whole my lord and my lady now comes, of course, with the English law. Where we don't say, your honor.
Yes.
I notice a lot of people like to say your honor in our courts and they are reprimanded because your honor is really coming from TV.
Ooh.
It's an American system.
Oh, my.
We don't use that,
but
because people watch American TV, they think it's your honor.
Oh my, okay.
But then in England, it is my lord and my lady, okay? And so all the judges who are esquires, those ones are referred to as my lady, my lord.
My lord. Oh, we watch too much.
Or your worship.
Your worship,
okay, if it's a magistrate, it's your worship. If it's a judge, my lord, my lady.
We must detox this American TV that we watch because, it's giving us wrong information.
They have done so much to influence us, haven't they?
They have, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We're going to round it up now, but we can't round it up without talking about money. What's your relationship with money, and what is the one lesson and mistake you've made?
Oh, okay. Thank you. To do with money, I subscribe to as much as possible.
Yeah.
Try to work your way out of employment. Yes. As Africans, we need to get to a point where we have an ownership mentality.
Sure.
We have to come out of needing to, needing always to have someone to tell us what to do, to have oversight over us. One famous speaker said, you can never be a millionaire on a salary. So there is nothing wrong with working for someone. But as you are working for someone, you must be training so that you have ownership. And I can give you a Bible reference, which is Luke chapter 16.
Yeah.
If you read from verse 8 and you go down, I think up to verse 12 or so.
Yeah.
That's the one that says, hey, ownership begins with stewardship.
Yeah.
So when you have been given a job, if you have a job and God has blessed you with a job, that's stewardship.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want you to end as a steward because you're looking after someone else's property.
Yeah.
He says, I want you ultimately to be an owner. That's why he says you must be a faithful steward. You understand? Yes.
Mm.
And so because he says, if you cannot look after the thing that belonged to someone, who will give you riches of your own?
Yeah.
If you can't, you so meaning the ultimate end, the ultimate goal is for God to give you something of your own, your own land, your own business, your own car, your own house without renting from anyone. So anyone who is listening to this program, wherever you find yourself, focus on ownership ultimately. But ownership only starts with faithful stewardship. Then I will do that. Then just say this about what I have learned about money. Money is not my friend. Money is not my relative. So the minute money comes, you know, if it is cash, I put it on my desk and I say, hello, money. How are you, money? You and I are not related. You are here for a reason. Please perform your reason and go. But while you are here, don't mess up my relationship with my mother. Don't mess up my relationship with my husband.
Don't do it.
Don't mess up my relationship with my children and my sisters.
Yeah, don't do it.
You understand? So we must always put money in its proper pigeonhole. Otherwise, money can tend to mess us up and to mess up our relationships. And money doesn't stay. The whole reason of it coming is so that it goes. You already want to buy things. You want to pay for bills. You want to do all kinds of things. So don't put more importance on money than is worthy.
Sure.
Even if money answereth all things,
money
can also destroy relationships and can destroy even your own attitude.
Sure. Okay, let's round it up then. If you were to give your younger self advice, what would you advise yourself?
I would have said to myself, I wish you had gotten into a covenant with God earlier. I got into a covenant with God when I was about 28. And a lot of, you know, and he gave me so much wisdom about so many things, okay, and set me up in so many positions. I was thinking, imagine if I had this relationship with God and this much of wisdom and this much of his openings, you know, even ministry, I could have started earlier. I could have even averted some of the foolish youthful mistakes that we normally make. And then you're not trying to be fixing now, you know, working backwards. You are just going right ahead. And what I would say to my younger self and to the younger people who are listening, you know what? Find God. Seek God as quick as you can, right? And get on with walking with him. There is no better experience in this world ever.
Lovely. And what would you do differently? What would you change?
What would I change? I don't know that I would change anything, actually.
You love the way things have turned out.
Yes, okay. Because you know the minute that you know I started walking with God, he just set me up on such high places. So one of my favorite hymns is, Lord, lift me up onto higher ground. I want a higher plane. So each time I'm seeing God setting me on a higher plane, even for a person who's like young, you're like a person where God has placed you where there are old mandalas, you know, and you're thinking, what am I doing here? You know, how did I get here? And so, you know, the minute that I started my walk with God and my covenant with God, there was nothing that I regretted. I didn't want to change a thing. And everything is happening at the right time.
Sure. Love that. Young people listening, some look up to you. They might not necessarily have the time or the chance to come to you, see you from afar. And this interview is perhaps the only option and only opportunity that they might have to hear about you. What would be your words of advice, particularly to young black women?
To the young black woman, take your time before you get married.
Okay.
But keep yourself sexually pure.
The
highest form of worship is sexual purity. And it means you're not giving away your thunder. You know, every woman, when she's born with thunder. But the minute you become, you start to give yourself away in that sense, you are giving away your thunder. And you no longer have the confidence you should have. And even as you are keeping yourself for marriage, remember, God always has somebody special for you. When you are keeping yourself for marriage, do not compromise. Pray to God that he gives you that discipline, you know, and self-control, that temperance to tell people no. Each person who's listening to me, the and whether it's a woman or a man, sorry, a boy or a girl, a female or a male, okay, the first thing and the last thing I'll tell you is, your future depends on your definition. How are you defining yourself? People must know who they are dealing with.
Yes.
They cannot deal with so-and-so today. Tomorrow you've changed shape.
Someone
you are now
else.
Following
yes.
this superstar. The next day you've got pink in your hair. You want to look like that singer. You have to have a definition. And when you are defined, we must know you are a triangle. If you are a triangle, we treat you like a triangle.
Yes.
So put boundaries for yourself. Insist that people respect those boundaries.
Mm.
And then that way you are predictable and you are dependable.
Yeah.
And you can see your way through without trying to please anybody.
Yeah. Sure. Mm. Thank you, Advocate. That was beautiful. Really appreciate your time.
Can I make a proposition
here? And that proposition, I'm going to take it to my producer. We are not done. There's still a lot here that you and I have not touched. It's just the time is not on our side. But please indulge us next time once again.
I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And may God bless you, your business, and your work as well.
And you too, my brother.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Sure.
Thank you so much. We're talking to Advocate Maphosa. Wow. I loved that conversation. Really, really loved it. And I hope that you have loved it as well. You have enjoyed it. That was our shapeshifter for today. That is Advocate Nyaratso Maphosa.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.